readied themselves for the ensuing battle. And even though Duryodhan made as many alliances as he could, and his forces outnumbered Yudhisthira's, he still felt uneasy. His spies told him that Yudhisthira had sent his brother Arjuna to Dwarka to seek Krishna's help in the fight. Duryodhan's head was in a spin. This would be disastrous. Krishna's army was made up of the finest soldiers anywhere in the world. They were fierce and bold. With these warriors on the side of the Pandavas, he would surely be defeated. "Get me my fastest horses," he shouted to his servants. "I must leave for Dwarka at once." Duryodhan made good time. He arrived at Krishna's palace moments before Arjuna, and he rushed into Krishna's chambers to find Krishna sleeping on the couch. Duryodhan sat at a chair by his head. Soon Arjuna arrived, surprised to find Duryodhan waiting. Arjuna took a seat by Lord Krishna's feet, and when Krishna awoke, his glance fell upon Arjuna. Krishna jumped up. "Arjuna, pray tell, what brings you here?" "My dear Krishna," Duryodhan spoke up, "I happen to be waiting here long before Arjuna." "And how can I help you?" Krishna asked him. "I am here to seek your help in the upcoming battle."
"I see. And you, Arjuna, why have you come?" Krishna inquired.
"I have also come to seek your help, my lord."
"Well, this presents somewhat of a problem," Krishna pondered.
"There is no problem," Duryodhan retorted. "Obviously, since I was here first, I should get first preference."
Then Krishna explained that when he awoke, he saw Arjuna first.
"But Krishna, you are known to be impartial," Duryodhan stated. "Arjuna may be your good friend, and you may have seen him first. But I was here first, and I insist that you give me first consideration."
"Yes, yes," Krishna said. "Somehow I must please you both. Therefore, one of you can have my powerful army, and the other can have me, alone and unarmed, for I will not actively partake in the fighting. Now you must decide."
"Well, Krishna, your terms are..."
"Duryodhan, please," Krishna interrupted him. "Arjuna is just like your younger brother. You can understand that the youngest must be satisfied first." Duryodhan's jaw dropped. All seemed lost. Beads of sweat began to pour down his face as Krishna turned to Arjuna. "So, Arjuna, what is your choice?" And without hesitation, Arjuna chose Lord Krishna.
"Well, Duryodhan," Krishna concluded, "that means that you must take my military forces."
And Duryodhan's face lit up with joy.
"I am unworthy. I don't deserve such a gift. But if you insist, then what can I do? I can only fall at your feet and thank you. I thank you 1,000 times. May your glories be greater than ever. I thank you, Krishna. I thank you from the bottom of my heart."
And as Duryodhan departed, Krishna could not help but smile.
Soon, armies were on the move. The war drum sounded. The site of the battle was Kurukshetra, even then an ancient place of pilgrimage. Now it was to become a killing field. The day of the battle arrived. The pre-dawn hours were filled with the rustle of horses and elephants, chariots, armor, lances, swords, and clubs. The armies prepared themselves. They moved into their positions. Finally, the sound of conches and trumpets signaled the readiness of both sides. Lord Krishna drove Arjuna's chariot. Arjuna asked Krishna to
drive to a bluff overlooking the opposing forces. In the distance, Arjuna saw his friends, his relatives, his teachers, and elders standing against each other, ready for battle. At this sight, Arjuna's eyes filled with tears. He trembled. His mighty Gandiva bow slipped from his hands and fell to the ground. Overwhelmed with grief, he fell to his knees and declared, "O Krishna, I will not fight." Arjuna looked toward his friend for guidance. At this time, Lord Krishna spoke the eternal wisdom of Bhagavad Gita, the song of God. Natvevaham jatunasam natvam ne me janatipaha natchaiva nabhavishyamaha sarve vayam atah param dehinoshmim yata dehe kumaram yovanam jara tata dehantara praptir diras tatra namuyati. O Arjuna, there was never a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor any of these warriors. And in the future, there'll never come a time when we cease to be. In this world, the soul takes on a material body. The body changes from childhood to youth to old age. And at the time of death, the soul changes to another body. The soul does not die, but is eternal. The soul is full of knowledge and joy. Those who are wise understand the true self and are not bewildered by the constant changes of this world. They are not disturbed by the flow of desires that come and go like the waves of an ocean. One who sees me in all things can attain peace, and at the time of death, such a soul can return to Vaikuntha, my eternal abode. And Arjuna asked, "My dear Lord Krishna, how can I meditate upon you?" And Krishna described himself in this way: "I am the sound in ether, the taste of water, the sweet fragrance of the earth. I am the ability in man, the life of all that lives, the beginning, the middle, and the end of all things. Of sacrifice, I am the chanting of my holy names. Of poetry, the primeval prayer. Of water, I am the vast ocean. Of purifiers, the mighty wind. Of lights, I am the luminous sun, and amongst the stars, I am the soothing moon. Of seasons, I am springtime, bringing life to the woods and meadows. Of rivers, the sacred Ganges. Of immovable things, the Himalayas. And of trees, the holy fig. I am victory. I am adventure. I am the strength of the strong, the wisdom of the wise, and of secrets, I am silence. I am the source of all things yet to come. I am the breath of life flowing inwards and out. I am death, who brings all things to an end. And yet, I am the Supersoul in the hearts of all. I am their shelter and their dearmost friend. After hearing Krishna's divine discourse, Arjuna picked up his bow and held it to his chest. O Krishna, O Lord of Lords, I am firm now. By your mercy, my illusion is dispelled. I am prepared to act. The battle at Kurukshetra raged for 18 days. In the end, the Pandavas emerged victoriously. Finally, Yudhisthira sat on the royal throne. He ruled for many years. But one day, he felt uneasy. Some strange, unexplainable mood had settled upon the kingdom. He sought to understand. He went out of the palace and wandered through the streets. What he found sent chills up his spine. It was the coming of the age of Kali, the age of quarrel and destruction. Upon his return to the palace, he described what he had found to his brothers. It's frightening. The direction of eternal time has changed. The disturbances in my kingdom astonish me. Now, Mother Cow no longer gives her milk. Now, honest dealings are corrupted. People are becoming greedy and angry. Misunderstanding has arisen between parent and child, between brothers, between husband and wife. Now, there is strain and quarrel. And even in the temple, the deities seem to cry. Oh, strange. My left side trembles. An ill omen. At daybreak, the she-jackal howls at the rising sun. She spits fire. And a pigeon descends, wings against the sky. Ah, this pigeon is like a messenger of death. And the shrieks. Shrieks of owls. Shrieks of crows. Shrieks which pierce my heart. The earth and mountains throb. The river shakes and spills. The wind blows violently. Dust and darkness everywhere. And the clouds rain blood. What is this extraordinary time? What is coming? Now, cities and villages are bereft of beauty, devoid of happiness. Now people are confused, enraged, and weeping. And weeping. A dreadful mood hung over the kingdom. Yudhisthira knew it was time for a new generation to rule. The day had come when Yudhisthira put aside his crown and his scepter. He gave up the garments of the royal order. He dressed in rags. He carried a simple wooden staff for support. His hair grew long and matted. He remained silent. He wandered around the palace like one who is deaf and dumb. Then, one night, he quietly left everything behind and journeyed on foot to the Himalayas. His brothers had been observant. They saw him as he left his chambers in the dead of night. They followed him. And Draupadi, their queen, also followed. And a dog also followed them. The dog would not leave them as they roamed the barren wilds. They journeyed north, treading the same path their ancestors had taken since ancient times. On their journey, they fasted and prayed, their hearts and minds absorbed in thought of Lord Krishna. To sustain themselves, they breathed deeply the fresh mountain air. It gave them strength to go on. The high country proved harsh and desolate. It was bitter cold. Draupadi, she was so fragile. She was the first to give up her life. Then, Nakula and Sahadev, the gentle twins, left this mortal world. Next, Arjuna, the great bowman. He could go no further. He fell to the earth. After some time, Bhima, with the strength of 1,000 elephants, sat down. He too passed into eternity. Only Yudhisthira remained. Yudhisthira and the faithful dog. The dog kept him company. At times he was watchful, at times playful, always loyal to his master. Together, Yudhisthira and the dog journeyed toward the mountain heights. Vast mountain ranges stretched out before them as far as the eye could see. Nearing the summit, Yudhisthira beheld a shimmering light in the distant sky. It approached him at a great speed. As it came closer, Yudhisthira saw that it was a golden chariot drawn by 4 pure white horses. Thunder cracked in the sky all around. The chariot was driven by Indra, the king of heaven and the master of the thunderbolt. The chariot circled the mountain peaks and came to a halt, hovering slightly above the ground before Yudhisthira. King Indra beckoned him. "Come, climb onto my chariot. Come with me to the heavens." Yudhisthira shook his head. "No, I have no desire to go to heaven without my brothers and without Draupadi." "Then hurry," said Indra, "for they have already reached the celestial abode and are waiting for you at this very moment." Yudhisthira then joyfully mounted the chariot, and the dog also tried to climb on. Looking upon the creature with disdain, Indra blocked his way. "A dog is an unclean animal." "But he has been my constant companion," said Yudhisthira. "I cannot leave him behind." "There is no place in heaven for a dog," Indra scoffed. "If the dog cannot go, then I will not go either." And Yudhisthira stepped down from Indra's magnificent chariot. "What? You are willing to give up the splendors and comforts of heaven for a dog? Have you lost your mind?" Indra stood in disbelief. "This dog has served me faithfully," said Yudhisthira, "and to abandon one who is faithful is infinitely sinful." And no sooner did Yudhisthira speak these words when the dog shed its gross form and revealed himself as Dharmaraj, the Lord of Justice, Yudhisthira's own father. "I have arranged this test just for you," he said, smiling upon Yudhisthira. "You are truly noble and possess all godly qualities. You and your brothers and chaste queen are worthy devotees of the Lord. You will all attain a place far greater than heaven." They mounted Indra's chariot. The horses stirred, and they were carried up, higher and higher, to the celestial kingdom. These stories are simply a drop of nectar in the vast ocean of Mahabharata. And at the end of Mahabharata, it is stated that as long as there is a spark of goodness in the heart of man, the story of the Pandavas will be told. And one who hears this great epic will acquire fame and the fulfillment of all desires. One who seeks prosperity will become prosperous. A woman bearing child will get a son or daughter highly blessed. One who wants a long life will get longevity. One who desires victory will attain victory. by listening or reciting Mahabharat, one will benefit both the ancestors and generations to come. But those who listen with faith and devotion will purify their hearts, and they will follow in the footsteps of Yudhisthira and Arjuna, and will surely attain Vaikuntha, the eternal abode of Lord Sri Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hari Hari, Hari Rama, Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hari Hari, Hari Rama, Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari.